Connor, you are there, I hope. Are you there?
I am, Jake. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Trying to get people to get their head around this Brandon Robb thing. Yeah, the NDAA sucks, but I'm sorry, he's being detained under a psychiatric hold, something that's been going on, and Thomas Zaz has been warning people for decades.
Yeah, that's very troubling. And to be fair, I mean, he has said a lot of things that can be suspected of the intent to commit an aggressive act. I think clearly he wasn't some guy minding his own business and critiquing policy. I read some of his posts, and I was a little just suspect of, well, does he perhaps have some sort of problem? Is he in fact going to kind of have some PTSD-induced, you know, aggressive act that he's going to commit? I think to the extent that we don't share in those types of overtly semi-aggressive posts, then we wouldn't be, you know, susceptible to be carted off like he was. I just think he kind of crossed a border, at least was flirting with gray area enough to subject himself to what I think was a wrongful detention. I don't think this should have happened by any means, but I can certainly understand why some might be fearful that he was going to commit an aggressive act when some of his posts were quite radical and suggested the intent to use violence to accomplish his ends.
Yeah, you got to think, though. I mean, at what point, what is that line? I mean,
right.
Do we get people for crimes, or do we get people for thinking about doing something? Because somebody cuts me off in traffic, yeah, I seriously think about taking a pipe wrench and shoving it down their throat, but I don't actually do it. Should I be detained for entertaining that thought or even saying it on the radio like this?
I agree, and that's why I said flirting with the gray area, because I think it is gray area, and many other people, especially those in power, are going to deem themselves justified in using that power just to prevent an action, though I agree that far more often they go to one extreme of the spectrum rather than our more liberty-tolerant extreme of the spectrum. I think that that's a gray area that should not be flirted with unless, you know,
but
you want
Connor,
to.
Connor, right. I mean, like, if I went and listened to an Ozzy Osbourne song, or I don't know, I'm kind of uneducated. I don't really listen to that kind of, like, death metal. I'm sure they're way more offensive and gnarly and nasty and disgusting than anything this guy posted on Facebook.
Right.
I mean,
true.
I know he posted some lyrics to song that talked about sharpening an axe and heads would roll or something like that.
Right.
But, I mean, really, like, just because something is distasteful or ugly, I mean, I don't know. I mean,
it really shows that, you know, they've revealed their hand, that we're turning into a pre-crime society, right? The whole Minority Report thing that out of fear of committing a future aggressive act, the state deems itself justified in detaining you. And that's, I think, where we need to fear the expansion of exactly what happened with this specific individual. We've seen it happen in other cases, perhaps in lesser cases, but to the extent that our justice system is turning into one of intervention for pre-crime, for thoughts, for statements, I agree with you. I find it particularly worrisome. The only thing that I'm explaining is it wasn't too surprising to me to see this happen. I object to it happening. I'm concerned that it happened. But the way some of the stuff that he was saying, it really didn't surprise me that somewhere, you know, somebody, you know, feared that something would happen.
It seems to me like what they do, you know, they test the waters. They do like one or two. And if there's a big uproar, then they're like, we probably won't do that because it'll be too much pushback. But what bothers me is I see liberty-minded people, and look, liberty-minded people, most people are new to this, and so I don't begrudge them, but I've had a couple people, I'm like, you know, this has nothing to do with the NDAA. This has nothing to do with it. The NDAA has not been invoked at all. I hate it. Yes, the NDAA sucks, but this has been going on for decades and decades, and Thomas Zaz, like, probably in my estimation, the greatest living libertarian around, has been fighting this tooth and nail since the 50s, and yet it's still gone on. Anyway.
Well, and at a minimum, I don't know of any case. Like, he may have pointed out many of these instances that have been going on, but out of the many negative consequences and things that are going on in this case, it's nice that it's getting a lot of attention to shine light on the fact that these things have been going on, predominantly under the radar. People aren't, you know, familiar with it.
That's what I hope. That's what I'm hoping is people actually see this, not about the NDAA, because I think people are rightfully indignatious about that. But they should have already been, like, up in arms, pitchfork, like, going after Frankenstein style, You know what I mean, about after these psychiatrists, because they are the biggest enemy to liberty that is unknown. They're like the sneaky guys behind the scenes. But anyway, I don't mean to dominate. What is it that you want to talk about today?
It's an important topic. The one that I want to talk about today is perhaps more financial than political, and it's kind of an intertwining both. As you know, public school is starting this week across Utah and elsewhere, of course, but you see, you log on to Facebook and everyone's saying, oh, last day of summer, first day of school, and everyone's talking about this. It's on everyone's minds. And so I'm led, you know, this being this time of the year, everyone's going back to school again, to ponder the system itself. Why do we have this system and the financial impact of it? And many of your listeners know, but just for the benefit of those who don't, a couple months ago I started this Libertas Institute, a libertarian public policy group organization here in Utah. So out of the many things that we're doing, one of them, of course, is to promote good policies, to get some good legislation passed, or better yet, get legislation repealed to try and better promote liberty. So I give a lot of thought in my free time, what little I have, to what bills we can run, what things we can do, what specific policies can we promote. And there's one that I wanted to bounce off of you. We can discuss it. Something that we may see come to light in this session, we may have to wait for future sessions, but the public school system in Utah is one of the biggest threats to liberty, and it's for two reasons. One, of course, is the system itself. We see the results. You know, these students are coming out of the system, and they're not familiar with, you know, history and political philosophy, let alone liberty at all. It's just they're tested, and they're standardized, and they're taught to the lowest common denominator. The product of the school system is not a classical, liberal, loving, philosophy, understanding type of intelligent person, of course, with exceptions. There are plenty of kids who can excel even being pushed through the system. But the nature of the system itself, I think, is a threat to liberty, but also based on how it's funded. And that's something I think few people look at. Now, to be fair, many people, of course, are worried about funding, as it's commonly bandied about in the news. Utah consistently has the lowest per pupil funding out of the entire country. New York, for example, is like $18,000 they spend in New York per pupil, and we hover around, if I recall correctly, about $6,000. I think in 2010 it was about $6,000 total that Utah was spending per student, and that's the lowest in the nation, so that's the very bottom benchmark. But when you start to peel away the layers and say, well, where do you obtain that money, I think then we find things that are objectionable, things that we can work at policy-wise to try and fix. Few people really know this, and I'm shocked at that in Utah, 100% of our state income taxes goes to the public education system. 100%, right? In many states, they either don't have income taxes or a portion goes to education and goes to fund other things. But in Utah, 100% of it is going to this system. And, of course, the income tax on its own is extremely objectionable, both at the federal level and at the state level. And so as I've been trying to think of different things we can do to address this from a policy standpoint, I've come up with an idea that I'd like to discuss, and certainly if your listeners have any input, I'd love for that as well. And that is to try and work with hit two birds with one stone. I would love to see a full income tax exemption for parents and other people who don't have kids, but parents who do not have children within the public school system. So if your kids are too young, or you homeschool or do private school, that you would have an income tax exemption. You would not be required through income taxes to fund the education system of which you are not taking part. And I think, you know, we tried vouchers a couple years ago. It was a lot of controversy, a lot of bad blood, a lot of fallout. People don't want to touch it anymore. But vouchers are fundamentally flawed from the standpoint that it would be money funneled through the state. And anything that the government funds, it ultimately controls.
Yep.
And so the last thing that we want at Libertas Institute, we do not support vouchers specifically out of the fear that by funneling money to private schools through the government, those private schools would increasingly, over time, perhaps not initially, in fact, I'm sure not initially, but over time, they would be required to comply with certain standards, certain curriculum changes, certain things that the state would tweak over time through its Office of Education to say, well, okay, now you need to modify this in order to continue to qualify for these vouchers. That's what we strongly object to. We want parents to be able to dictate where their own money goes. The idea is not to funnel the taxes through some other mechanism, but to return the taxes, ideally to not even take them in the first place, but baby steps. So the idea is to give a full income tax exemption, and we'll talk about more after the break about how that would work.
Yeah, I like that. That's a really nice idea. Guys, come on back. Wouldn't you like to be able to have that as an option, as a choice? All right, guys, come on back. Mental Self Defense Radio, Boy After Review. Tell me a little bit about this with regards to the income tax. How would this actually work? I mean, would we have to find somebody with half a brain and some guts in our state legislature? I mean, what are we talking about? What are we up against? I like this idea a lot.
So, you know, this would gain a lot of support from the voucher crowd. It would gain a lot of support from the kind of fiscal conservative crowd. It's different than vouchers. It's not, you know, we would have to start small, of course. We wouldn't say that everyone that doesn't have kids in the system would be able to take advantage of it, because we wouldn't be able to convince enough people. So, you know, we'd be willing to concede and say, okay, let's at least start with those who have children, school-aged children, but are not. So for in my specific case, let's use me as an example. I've got kids who very soon will be of school age, and I will not be putting them into the government schools. I'm not quite sure yet what we're going to do. We might homeschool, we might do private school, or you know, co-op, or who knows. We're not quite sure. All I do know is that we will not be using the government schools. So in my case, I will have to fund a system that I will not be benefiting from, or rather, in my case, that my kids would not be benefiting from. And some numbers are important here to understand the impact of this. So as I mentioned before the break, in Utah, an average of about $6,000 is spent per pupil, and that comes from a combination of funding sources. Some of it comes, about 55% comes from income taxes, something like 20 or 30% comes from property taxes. There's some from federal taxes and some other sources as well. This kind of combination of all this funding is funneled to education to pay for, on average, about $6,000 per kid. So under our arrangement, unlike vouchers, which directs this substantial amount of money from all these sources to, you know, a private school, charter school, whatever, in our case, it would only be a small percentage of the total funding source. We're not proposing to touch property taxes, certainly not federal taxes and these other sources. So, in fact, rather than having to funnel the entire amount to the individual who pay the income tax, they're only having to give up the income tax. And so they would still have their – in fact, they would be earning money, the school system, because they would be getting money for pupils that they don't have to educate. And they would have more money per pupil when you have this exodus of kids from the school system to be able to fund their you know, programs and initiatives. Now, it's interesting. So there's about 600,000 school-age kids in Utah, according to the census. And there are all sorts of estimates. There's no hard numbers, but around 10 to 20,000 homeschooling kids is what's estimated here in Utah. And then, of course, you have private school as well, and I couldn't find any reliable numbers on that. So, you know...
Well, it's not... It wouldn't be hard to compile that either, because between... my kids have been in both Emilio Reggio and Montessori schools, and there's a ton of them around here.
There are a lot. Yeah, if someone were to do the research, and certainly we could if we go down this path, it wouldn't be hard to compile, but in the, you know, half an hour I prepared for your
show, yeah,
I couldn't find anything. No, but it's good to know, to be able to give context to how many kids this would potentially impact. So, you know, estimates suggest that you're spending around $500 per kid per year if you homeschool. Some can do it for much less. Some will do it for more if you're doing all these field trips and things. But about $500 per kid per year. So the average Utah pays about $2,000 in income taxes. So if you've got four kids who are school age and you want to homeschool, then that income tax exemption would directly fund the entire homeschooling initiative that you want to do with your kids. So we're only proposing under this bill that we're looking to run that we would take a small percentage of the overall pie that goes to fund kids. And the nice thing here is that it attacks two things. One is it gets people's money back. It attacks the income tax. Right, and it's saying we shouldn't pay the income tax, and we're going to start looking at initiatives to get rid of it.
I mean, it's sneaky, because here's the thing. If I looked at how much I pay in income tax, I had always thought that what I was paying was just on my property tax. Mm-hmm. This adds a whole new chunk of money that I could be saving.
Right. Yeah, and for someone like me who isn't going to use the system, I say, well, that's great. If I can get that money back that the government's taking from me, the income tax is horrendously objectionable. It should not exist. Give me that money back, and I'll use it how I please. Maybe I would spend $100 per kid per year because I do it really well and for cheap and whatever, and then I have extra money, which is my property, my earned wealth, that I spend as I please. So it goes after the income tax, but also it begins to generate conversation about social services, about government-funded services, that we need to help people understand that services should be funded by those who participate in them, right? So on the flip side, if my kids are not in the system, I should not be forced to fund the system. Or on the other side, if my kids do participate in the system, then we should pay for what's required for them to participate in the system. So while we would have to start small and directly, of course, for the parents who would take a double hit, right, in my case where I want to homeschool or do private school and I have to pay for all that, plus I have to pay for other people's kids to go to school, that's where we want to start, because those parents, like myself, are the ones who are getting a double hit. They need to be freed up.
I'm in the same boat. My kids are in a Montessori school. It is, after our mortgage, our biggest expense.
Yeah.
I would love to get that money, not only off of the property taxes, why am I having to pay for the Granite School District? And then, like you're saying now, my income tax, 100%,
right,
going to, I should be, this is ridiculous.
Right, and so that's exactly the conversation we want to generate throughout Utah, is that those whose kids are participating in the system should be required to participate. Now, of course, the immediate criticism or rebuttal that you get, that I've heard so many times from any proposal like this, is that, well, we all benefit from an educated electorate, right? That's the idea for a community-based funding, taxation-based funding model.
Well, we do all benefit
model.
From an educated electorate. The problem is they're not educated. It's
well,
not
and even,
true.
Fair point, and I certainly agree with that. But even if they were legitimately and fully and wonderfully educated, the question is, should we be forced to fund their education? We agree. I completely agree that we all collectively benefit from an educated society, just as we benefit from a healthy society. In my view, we benefit from a moral society, even a religious society overall. These are things that I certainly agree with. I simply do not think that government should be the purveyor, the provider of these institutions, of these programs. It reminds me of the Bastiat quote, who says, you know, we object to a state religion, and so the socialists say that we want no religion at all. We object to state-based equality. Then they say that we are against equality. And then his closing line I love, he says, it's as if the socialists were to accuse us of not wanting persons to eat because we don't want the state to raise grain.
Right.
Right? It's a conflation between society and the government. In fact, in that quote, he talks about education too, I believe, that, you know, if we disapprove of state education, they believe we don't want people to be educated. That's simply wrong. In fact, we believe that people would be far better educated in terms of efficiency, in terms of quality, in terms of return on a single dollar, when done privately, when done in individual families, that people can be far better stewards of their own money than they are through the state, than the state is of their money, of our money. So that's what we would like to see, is returning this money. You know, we'd have to start small. Sure, we'll go after property taxes down the road, but we need to start somewhere. And where we want to start is the income tax, because, number one, the income tax is wrong. Number two, it funds just barely a majority of the education budget here in Utah. And so it's a good chunk of money that can be returned to parents who are already having to fund their kids in other programs, private or homeschool. This is a good focus point for us, because it breaks off into several issues that all of which we want to generate conversation on, that the income tax is wrong, that only those whose kids are in the school system should be required to fund it. We shouldn't be, you know, required to fund their kids' education. These are things we want to talk about, to promote. These are things that were really missed out on in the voucher conversation several years ago. Vouchers are simply the wrong way to go about it. We think ours is a far better, far more efficient, and far more really important way to go about it than simply funneling money differently through the government. We want to give money back to the individuals from whom it was taken in the first place.
Now, do we have anybody at the state level that's even, you know, like, half brave enough to dip their toe in this pool? Because I like it, but, you know, how are we going to actually get somebody to sponsor a bill or to make this kind of option available for us?
Yeah, so we did lose a bunch of good freedom-sympathizing legislators that, you know, clearly we didn't agree with everything they did, and we had their differences, but overwhelmingly they understood the importance of liberty and were willing to promote bills. A lot of them ran for other offices and lost. Some of them were defeated. So we've got smaller numbers, but, you know, we do have a fiscally conservative majority. We do have people who we can persuade and appeal to. There are legislators out there who, with Libertas Institute, we're in touch with. We're drafting bills. This is one that's on our radar, and I would certainly encourage your listeners to go to libertasutah.org. Many people say, well, how do you spell Libertas? It's just the word liberty, but instead of a Y, just put an A-S, Libertas. That's the name of the Roman goddess of liberty. So
oh,
it's
cool.
libertasutah.org. If you go there and hit contact, share with us your ideas. What bills would you like us to see us work on? What can we do to promote liberty in Utah? This is a bill that an idea that we're looking to get drafted and ready and find a sponsor. We have a few people who we're talking to about it. I won't name names just because I don't want to make any of them skittish or or any of their constituents tip their hand or anything like that. But there are many people who love liberty and freedom here in Utah, and even though we clearly have our disagreements on some or many other issues, as I've said on your show before with Libertas, we're willing to work with whoever wants to work with us. We're willing to promote liberty, however.
I know that, too, you guys were doing a promotion where people were writing in essays or anything.
Yeah.
You know, have you guys done a judgment on that, or where does that stand?
Yeah, so we did an essay. We're offering $2,000 in prizes, and so the submission deadline was this past Friday, so that closed. We have, I think, almost like 36 essays that were submitted. Some of them are fantastic. And so you can just go there to libertasutah.org, and you'll find the big banner to click on the essays. By this Friday, one of the $500 prize will be given out, and then the following Friday we'll pick the grand prize winner, the best essay, and that gets $1,500. And so we're really looking for ways to promote conversation about liberty in Utah. That was our first attempt to do it, just because we had recently launched. We're going to do that once a year. But certainly, if your listeners, whoever has any ideas how we can, you know, we've got some money, we've got a lot of great people on staff, we've got a lot of ideas, and we've got the resources to bring them about. So certainly, if you guys have ideas for what we can do, what you'd like to see done, let us know. We'd love to find the best ideas, and that's why we want to do the essay contest. We wanted people to suggest their ideas, give us their input.
Yeah, and get involved. And it's a great way to get people some sort of awareness. It is an exciting time. Like you said, maybe we lost some people in the legislature locally, but, you know, again, it's just inspiring maybe people to actually run. People who, like, you've inspired people to write these essays. Well, maybe the next step is that listen to this show or talking to you guys, people actually are like, you know what, I'm actually going to run. To heck with this. I'm actually going to get involved. So good on you. Connor, thank you so much again. I love it, man. I think that's a really nice alternative. I think you'd mentioned it before, but it always shocks me that, again, yeah, that 100% of our income tax here in Utah goes to these shoddy public schools. I mean, it just sucks. All right, man, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week. Guys,
check out
Connor every Tuesday here. Mental Self-Defense Radio, the Connor Boyack Review, every Tuesday at 2:30.